I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors, brought to you by Bear River Lodge. 2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
You know, I was just thinking, why does it feel like it's been forever since we've actually done this? But it's because it's been almost a month, guys. With Christmas falling on a Saturday and then New Year's falling on a Saturday, we have not been able to get together to put together new programs here for KSL Outdoors Radio, back for the first time in the new year, 2022. And it's great to have you joining us as we begin a new day here on KSL News Radio. We're getting ready to explore Utah and areas beyond, and we're really glad that you are here with us this morning. I'm Tim Hughes, broadcasting from the studios, back in studio for a couple of days this week at KSL Broadcast House in downtown Salt Lake City. Russ Smith is actually on the road today, but I talked to him yesterday, so I'll share some of the craziness of his road trip in a minute. Navadomskis is with us. You're working from home, too, because we both came down with this crazy Omicron thing over the last week or so.
Yep. Well, I mean, I'm in a school that's loaded with it. When I tested positive, I've been teaching remotely. In fact, I got my computer screen right up now, but it's lunchtime. So it's perfect for me to talk to you while my students are out of class. But just so you know, tomorrow the whole school gets tested, and they don't meet a number because we met our,
the percentages.
45, 55, yeah. Something. We met that. So now we got a test to stay. It's all through every classroom. I have so many people absent. And today's finals, so you know they're sick. They're not missing because they're playing hooky.
Well, you better wait another day to talk more about that. Of course, by the time, we should tell everybody again, we're recording this program on Thursday, which we always do. But we heard on KSL this morning, Thursday morning, that the state's going to take another look at it. This test-to-stay thing just is not sustainable, first of all, with the people to do the testing. Secondly, they don't have the amount of test available to do it. So they're looking at some other angles. We'll see where this thing goes. But my goodness.
We got illness a lot in the classroom. And if they find a way to stay open, it's just because they want to.
Yeah.
Because there's no question it's all over the class.
Well, the craziness to me is, and this has been the case for 2 years, but if you test on Friday, kids go home on Saturday, hang out with their friends, go to a restaurant, mom and dad are out, they go to work, they come back. Kids could be exposed same day. So unless you're going to test every single day, I don't know how this.
Well, they postponed the testing until Friday because of design, because they're counting the days, the Saturday, the Sunday, the Monday, because it's a holiday, and the Tuesday for the teachers to make grades. So they're only going to miss one day of school if they come back over the threshold.
Yeah. It just seems to be a never-ending process. But hopefully this thing goes quickly as it has, and it sounds like it's doing in the eastern part of the country. We're a couple of weeks behind them, but the cases are dropping and at least leveling out in many of those places. All right, let's bring Bob Grove into the conversation from the southern end of the state. How are things down there, sir?
Good. Sunny day today. It's, we're liking the blue sky and 50s, I think. Might be in the 60s today. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we're going to be close to 50 here.
So it must be warmer here.
Yeah, it must be.
Blue skies. When is it not blue skies in southern Utah?
Yeah.
That's true. Although we've had some overcast days recently, but yeah, generally, actually, it gets boring. Go, come on.
You know, it's funny to hear you say that because I grew up in Southern California, and I swore, and Navi, you grew up in New Mexico, right?
No, Texas.
Or Texas. Yeah, I swore I never wanted to go back to a place where we didn't have four seasons because I love the change of the seasons. And, yeah, 75 degrees or 70 degrees every day sounds good, but I really think I would miss the changing of the seasons having spent my
home. 100% behind you there.
Yeah. Bob, you had a good New Year so far?
I have. Yeah, this last week was a good week. I had had a birthday.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm now 35.
Very good. And still healthy as a horse.
Because you know it. When you turn 50, you start counting backwards, right? Everybody knows that, right?
Exactly. Hey, we're going to be checking in with Mark Wade, of course, for a little road tripping. You guys haven't been letting any grass grow under your feet down there. You were out and about not long ago.
That's right. Just last week, we did a little exploring. We haven't been on the road for a while, so it was great to get back out and get our cameras out and spend a little time in some new areas we hadn't really explored much.
Yeah, so we'll share that experience. And I'm also looking forward to, here's the other thing, with the holidays falling the way they did on Saturdays, we haven't had the chance to do a follow-up conversation with your other friend, Mark, who happens to be a neighbor. When we last heard from him, he had a SkyCall satellite phone in his hand, and he was down in the Grand Canyon. He's back safe, and he's set to join us today, too, right?
That's right. Yeah, I know he's back because I saw him in the driveway, so he made it.
Okay,
he made it.
That's good. He was supposed to be back by Christmas. I hope that also became part of the story. So we'll look forward to that conversation this morning. Of course, we'll check in with Roger Eggett from Bear River Lodge. We'll make that our snow day segment as we talk some snowmobiling. They really got blasted with some snow before this high pressure set in on us again. We could use another blast of it, Navi. Becky's been skiing the past couple of days, but she says it's obvious that we need some fresh powder up there.
Yeah, the worst thing we could get is high pressure systems. I hate them when they're here. I hope this one breaks down soon.
And we'll talk a little skiing coming up with what we can tell you about the season as it rolls out here. January is Learn to Ski and Snowboard month, so it's a good month to be doing that. I hope to be able to reach out to Raylene at Ski Utah and tell you about a fantastic program that they've got where a lot of people who have come here from other parts of the world and really don't have the ability financially to get out and learn to ski, they have a program where they're actually putting some of these people together with instruction, with equipment, with transportation, and they've got some, they had their first day this past week on the mountain, and they've got some stories to tell already. So I look forward to being able to share that story with you. And then Randy Opplinger will join us from the Division of Wildlife Resources, going to talk ice fishing. And Navi, even though it's been warmer down here in the valleys, I saw a note from Strawberry Bay Marina yesterday that the ice conditions in some places at Strawberry are already almost a foot thick.
Yeah, well, they have terribly cold nights. And, you know, you put a bunch of cold nights in a row, you're going to get some thick ice, which is just what you want when you're ice fishing.
Yeah, so Randy will help us sort all of that out. If you're not an ice fisherman and maybe you've designated this as the year where you're going to go give it a try, we'll give you some direction on how and where to do that. All right, so I mentioned that Russ is not here. I wish all of us could have been on the conversation. I tried to twist his arm to get him to call in today, but he's somewhere in Texas. I'm trying to remember the name of it. You may know this, Navi. It was not a place I was familiar with. Is it Zona? Zona, Texas?
Dona, yeah.
Dona,
yeah, well,
or
I've
Zona?
I've never been there, but yeah, that's... Look, you could drive for 2 days and still be in Texas, just so you know.
Well, that's what he was complaining about yesterday, is he's on Highway 10, and it just seems to go...
Yeah, if you're going down Highway 10, you just put on the autopilot and get in the back seat and have a nap, because you never have to turn.
Yeah. Oh, it's Ozona. That's what it is. Ozona, Texas.
I don't know it.
I didn't either, but that's where they were spending some time. Anyway, you know, this is their first big road trip with the new RV. And I wish I had, like, some Chevy Chase music or some sound effects or something, because it sounds like it's been a comedy of errors. They bought an older RV, and he thought he'd taken care of everything and had everything figured out. Turns out he did not do his due diligence, and still to this day, there are 4 or 5 days into the trip now, doesn't know how to use the heater in there, which became a bit of a problem at night in some of their stops.
That's a problem. I mean, look, that problem's never going away. Just so you know, that's an RV nightmare is the heater.
Well, secondly, he fills up the water tank here in Salt Lake and then hits the road in the dead of winter.
What?
He gets down to his first stop, and no water comes out. So he doesn't know what's going on. He thinks the pump's not working. Turns out that the water tank was frozen into a solid block of ice. So by the time they got down to Texas, it had thawed out pretty well, so they had water. However, they did break the pump in the process, so they had to stop and get another pump.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah. I wish I would have told him, you don't drive with water anyway, because it eats so much gas because you're so heavy. Water is incredibly heavy. So you empty your tank when you get on the road, and then you fill it up when you land somewhere.
Yeah, but wait, it gets better.
Uh-oh.
Then he goes to get something, out of the refrigerator, and the door falls off in his hands. And I said, well, did the screws come out of the hinges or something? He said, no, part of the plastic broke. I said, well, what are you doing going down the road now? Duct tape.
Right.
Got a duct tape.
Duct tape is what you have to have. I was going to say duct tape the whole time you were talking.
It sounds like a beautiful time for Russ and Mama.
Does he have a GPS tracker with him?
I don't know, but I would guess he does, yeah. Anyway, just funny stuff, and I can't wait for him to share some of that with us when we do finally connect. But we got to take a break here. When we come back, some news of the week here on KSL News Radio. Don't go away.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio for another week. Nice to have you here. Tim Hughes along with Mike Navidomskis, old Navi up there in Kaysville, and Bob Grove down there in southern Utah today. You asked me as soon as we went to break, Bob, if I had talked at all or read much about this ban on trail cams. You're the lucky man that just bought one, huh?
Yeah, Mark and I invested in a trail cam so that we could. We were inspired by a guest that you had on the show that was has this really amazing video. So we wanted to do the same, and not sure if we'll be able to now.
Well, here's what we're talking about, and I'm sure if you're a hunter, you're already well aware of this. But the Division of Wildlife Resources have said that trail cameras and other hunting-related technologies are going to be restricted during big game hunting season. The Wildlife Board approved the new rule. When was this? It was before the end of the... No, it was right after the beginning of the year, January 5th. They've got some new rules now, right now, that follows a bill passed in May that required the Wildlife Board to enact some rules regulating the use of cameras. And the division surveyed over 14,000 big game hunters for ideas, with an overwhelming majority opposing using transmitting trail cameras for hunting. That surprised me a little bit because, if you got into hunting, I guess, in recent years and always used that technology, your nose might be a little out of joint. But I'll tell you guys, I looked at the Division of Wildlife Facebook page, and it's overwhelmingly in favor of these restrictions, and it all comes down to the idea of a fair hunt, fair chase. And let me just read some of the responses from the people that contributed to the conversation. This person says, I hunted my whole life. My kids grew up hunting with me the same as I grew up hunting with my dad. None of us have ever used trail cameras. You hunters complaining about this are lazy trophy hunters and need to learn how to hunt rather than sit home watching trail cam video. Get out there in person. It is called hunting. And there are similar sentiments all around. Some people use trail cameras as, educational purposes. Another person says, as they are banned too, If that's so wrong, there's nothing wrong with using them. It's like using a fish finder, so let's ban that. Come on, DWR. Do you see that as the same comparison, Navi? You're a fisherman.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, like, I don't use a fish finder. And, yes, I have one in the garage, but I absolutely don't use it because, yeah, it is kind of – I spend more time looking at that than I do thinking about what's happening with my line and stuff. But, look, I'm going to agree with all those hunters. It's not really a fair fight already. I know people are using primitive weapons and they're using, like, archery. And the reason why is they want to handicap themselves so it is fair. That's what sport means. You want a fair fight. You don't want a heavyweight going against a welterweight. You know how that goes, Tim. Yeah. Look, when you fly into Alaska or Canada, for that matter, you are not allowed to hunt for 24 hours because there is a possibility you have seen game from the air. Mm. And that gives you an overwhelming advantage in hunting. So you have to sit in camp for 24 hours before you can engage in the hunt. And again, it's all about making it a sport, making it fun and thrilling and a true accomplishment. And I agree wholeheartedly. I love looking at trail cam video.
I think it's
the coolest thing watching animals. But I can see how it would be a terrible advantage during hunting season.
Here's another guy, first name Lucky, says, I don't agree or disagree. Timing is too far off the mark is my problem. Trail cameras have been around for a long time. Why now are they bad? The fact is that trail cams aren't the problem. The problem is that people are now more efficient hunters because of the cameras. In the end, it's all about the money. A large percentage of the revenue the DWR makes is based on kill rates versus tags sold. They're in charge of maintaining herd numbers, but sadly they aren't willing to sacrifice revenue by adjusting the number of tags they sell. And then one more note here. Where was it? Oh, someone tried to equate this to using hunting dogs if you're out, you know, hunting pheasants. And Devin says, I guess sicking dogs and just walking up and shooting them wasn't unsportsman enough. They need cameras, too. So it has sparked a whole conversation. And there are literally, I thought it was thousands, maybe it's just hundreds, but there are hundreds and hundreds of comments. If you want to look the Division of Wildlife up at Utah Division of Wildlife Resources on Facebook, it's kind of entertaining just to see the different opinions. But I understand. Here's the other question. How will it be enforced? And if somebody like you, Bob, just wants to get some nice video of wildlife truly in the wild to share on your website, how do you go about it? How will they enforce this?
Yeah, good question. You know, the only thing we shoot with are our cameras. So
yeah.
we're not going to get any advantage that way. But yeah, I understand. And we're certainly not opposed to the legislation on this, but I hope that there's some exceptions or exemptions or something out there where it's used for the purposes that we're interested in.
Well, and I'll be honest, I haven't gotten the chance to dive that far into the weeds with some of the details. There will be parameters that are set specifically around certain hunts during the year, so there's some dates anywhere on the calendar that you'd have to avoid. Navi, you wanted to say something?
Well, the same. I agree that he, you know, I think Bob should be able to have his trail cam. He's not a hunter. I think this affects hunting. And if you're a hunter, I mean, look, everybody likes to limit themselves. I'm just giving very examples. Do you fish with a single hook? Do you fish with a treble hook? You know, are you only fly fishing only? You know, are you going to handicap yourself as an outdoorsman? And if you are, then you're a sportsman.
Yeah.
And if you're going to cheat and the people shooting them out of season, you know, using trail cams, you're crossing the lines, I think, that should be personally implemented by our own ethos, not necessarily the law.
Interesting conversation. I shared it on our Facebook page, so if you want to go to KSL Outdoors Radio, take a look at it, make a comment. We'll share some of your comments on next week's program. We do need to take a break. We've got a news update on the half hour, and on the other side, we'll get a follow-up to the story of the solo floater down there in Grand Canyon. Shared his story with you via the satellite phone just before the end of the year. We'll get a wrap-up to how his trip went coming up in just a minute.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.